Welcome to the Down and Dirty Podcast, the ultimate guide to modern midlife dating. I'm your host, Celeste Moore, and I'm here to help you navigate the challenges of today's dating world. Think of me as your female version of Hitch, but better. With over 16 years of experience as a certified image consultant and dating coach, I've got the inside scoop on what women want. In this podcast, we're diving deep into the world of healthy masculinity and modern dating. It's a fast-changing industry, and here you'll find personal stories, expert insights, and candid conversations that will empower you to take control of your dating life. There's never been a better time to achieve your desired outcome, whether it's marriage, finding a significant other, securing a life partner, or simply regaining your dating confidence. We're here with you twice a week to explore the viewpoints and challenges in today's dating arena that resonate with every man seeking dating success and love. So let's dive into today's episode. We've got an exciting discussion lined up for you. Get ready for the Double D's of Dating, where dating dilemmas turn into dating triumphs. I want to welcome you to another episode of the Down and Dirty Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Celeste Moore. Thanks again for everybody that continues to jump on and listen to the show. I really, really appreciate it. And all you new listeners, welcome, welcome. It absolutely means the world to me. I'm so grateful for everybody that continues to jump on and all my amazing guests I get to interview because they are the experts and I get to learn so much from them. If you feel so inclined to, please leave a good review, a great review, glowing review, and a 5-star rating. That really helps the show move it to the forefront so that people can learn and find the content easier. Anyways, but before I jump into today's episode, I'm super, super excited to introduce you my beautiful guest today. Her name is Emily Dumpkin. Emily goes by the pronouns she and her, and she's the founding sexologist of Emily Dumpkin Sexology, an online sex therapy practice to help individuals and partners all over the world cultivate sexual wellness. She's also the host of the podcast That's Orgasmic, discussing all things sex, sexuality, and sexual health. Emily, thank you so much for coming on the show today. I really, really am excited to talk to you about all your amazing knowledge that you have.
Thank you for having me. I'm super excited to be here. It's obviously been a bit of an ordeal to get us to this point with technical issues, but yes. I'm glad that we're finally getting there.
Yes, I really appreciate it. Yes, we've had a few technical issues today, and we're going to try this one last time. And I honestly think there are times a charm. So no, I'm really, really excited. I was on Emily's show about a month ago, and I really love when we cross-pollinate in the podcast world and we're able to be a really good fit for each other's show. And so I really was so grateful that Emily decided to come on the show today and talk to everybody about sexual health and wellness. And just so you know, my downloads on my podcast, the most downloads are on sex. And so it was a perfect fit for you to be here today. So can I just first start off with kind of what led you down the path of sexology and sex therapy?
Yeah, so what got me on this path was chlamydia. I contracted it for the first time at 18, and I realized just how much I didn't know about sexual health, and that if I didn't know this, nobody around me knew this. At school, we're often taught if you even get any sex ed, these are what STIs are, don't get them, not what to do when you do contract them. And this was from my boyfriend at the time. I assume because that's when symptoms started after I became sexually active with him, and about 4 months in, got tested, came back positive for chlamydia. And obviously at 18, that's terrifying. You're like, oh my God, like, what is this? And the hardest part was then my conversations with him. So I obviously let him know what was going on, but then I didn't have any more conversations. I just left it there. I just assumed that he would go and get tested, treated. And that it's, you know, that's that. We don't need to talk about it anymore, which is so not the case. Because then I then contracted it 3 months later again. I think I would have contracted it straight away, but then just lived with it for 3 months. And then that turned into pelvic inflammatory disease. And I had to have surgery to check everything out because I was still experiencing pelvic pain. And it turned into this big ordeal. And the more I learned, the more I realized I didn't know. And I was like, if I don't know this, no one does. And not anyone, at least my age. And then I found this whole world of sexologists, sex therapists, people living with STIs, like herpes, because I just, you know, went on this deep dive. And yeah, changed my uni degree from criminology to psych because I was like, I need to be a part of this. I want to be a part of this conversation. Every time I talked about sex to anybody, they were so excited to talk about it. And they wanted to tell me their own stories about STIs or just honestly sex in general. And I just found that, yeah, the more I was talking about it, the more everyone wanted to talk about it. And it was a really welcomed conversation. So I was like, let's make a whole career out of this. And then, yeah, by 22, I became a clinical sexologist. And now I'm doing my master's of counseling just to keep going because I just can't stop studying. But yeah, 23 now. So a lot of people see that, like, oh my God, you're so young to be doing this. But I found my passion very early, which was lucky.
Yeah, I would say that's a blessing, right? Because I think so many people just kind of like, oh, this makes money or whatever. And so they just kind of go down a path that they're never passionate about. And your sexual, you know, kind of, I don't know, incident or thing that kind of made you kind of look at your sexual health and wellness led you down this path. So I think it's a beautiful thing. I mean, you know, it's silver lining, right? Is that what they say?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And so many people make comments to me like, oh, I wish, you know, I just like was so passionate about something like you are with this. And I was like, it was honestly like so many people contract STIs, but not many actually then go and do a whole career path change and find this passion of sex. Like, it just, yeah. I just got lucky that, you know, I managed to turn something like chlamydia into let's make this my whole identity and become a sexologist.
I love that though. Chlamydia to sexologist, hey, you know?
Yes.
And so you're really educating people on having those conversations and communicating better so that you don't have this happen for them. And so, when are you having these discussions? When are you teaching your clients or just teaching in general, like on your podcast? Like, when should people be having these discussions with a new partner, let's say?
So I recommend to have it as early as possible. It's going to be different depending on who you're dating, when sex is coming up, when you're even being sexually active with them and what that looks like, and whether you're somebody who lives with an STI or who doesn't. Because certain STIs like HSV, which is herpes, or HIV, people are living with. It's not something that you can, you know, treat and it disappears from your body. So I recommend that if sex comes up as a conversation before you've even had sex, try and put it in there. You know, say, I really, you know, I care about my sexual health, or I want to, you know, I care about, you know, your sexual health. I want to prioritize that. This was the last time I had an STI test. When was yours? Or how do you like to have safer sex? I always like to use the word safer sex instead of safe because there's no completely safe sex. Because even if you use a condom, there's still skin on skin contact on other areas, which could pass something like herpes. So just a little side note, but
no, that's good to know.
Yeah. So recommend trying to bring it up that way. It's ideally best practice to try and have this conversation before the first time you have sex. However, that's not always realistic. So just trying to do it as soon as possible. Or let's say you've been dating for a few weeks now, you're being sexually active, just, you know, be like, oh, you know, I'm going to go get my routine STI test. I'll let you know the results. When was your last STI test or something like that? I think it's still important to have that conversation because some people will just go get tested, have a negative result, which is great, but then not ask their partner, just assume that because they tested negative, that therefore their partner is going to test negative. And sometimes that's not always the case. Some people will show up. It takes a little bit longer for it to show up. So chlamydia and gonorrhea can take up to 2 weeks to come back positive on an STI test, HIV and other STIs up to 3 months. So it's important to, I guess, have that conversation still. Because say you get tested in the first week and you have chlamydia, but it hasn't actually had time to come up yet. And then you may just make the assumption that you and your partner are both safe, or not safe, but, you know, don't have an STI. But that might not always be the case.
No, that's good to know. How often should you get tested, or what do you recommend?
So I generally recommend either after each new sexual partner, but if that's a lot of new sexual partners and it's then within these two week time frames or whatever, doing it every 3 months. If you're with somebody a bit more long term, either every 6 or 12 months.
Yeah. No. Okay. That's good to know, because like you said, some things come up later. So like maybe you were tested and everything was negative, but like 2 weeks later, I don't know. I'm just saying something came up positive. So, and yeah. I think you had mentioned that not all STIs present themselves and you could be carrying. Is that correct?
Yes. So sometimes it won't come up on the test results straight away, but then also a lot of the time will be asymptomatic. So I know my experience with chlamydia, the first time I was symptomatic, the next two times I wasn't symptomatic. 80% of people won't have symptoms. And then with other STIs like herpes, for instance, 90% of people don't have symptoms. Or if they do, they think it's just like an ingrown hair or something. So it's easily, you know, mistaken.
Wow. Okay.
So yeah, so 90% of people won't ever have symptoms. So it's only that 10% who are actually, I guess, coming back with a positive result. But the thing with herpes is that if you go to the doctor, I'm fairly certain it's the same in America. I think it's generally around the world at the moment. If you go to the doctor and you say, I want to get tested for everything, they won't test you for herpes, because you actually need to have a lesion present for them to swab. Otherwise, the results can be inaccurate, because in the blood test, all they can see is if you have HSV-1 or HSV-2 present, but not where it is on the body. And you can get, and HSV-1 is typically cold sores on your mouth or presented, you know, around that area or like nose or something. But you can also get that on your genitals, and HSV-2, which is typically genital herpes, you can also get on your mouth. So when they do the blood test, all they can say is you've got it in your body, but they don't know where. And because there's so much shame and stigma around herpes, doctors think it's best practice just to not tell you, because it's not actually, apart from, and not to minimize people's experience of symptoms, because some people do experience extremely painful symptoms, but they find that the psychological burden of it is worse than the actual symptoms themselves. So they just do, they don't ever like test people for it. So we've got 90% of people who don't have symptoms, and then they're not actually testing for it. So it's honestly safe to assume that nearly everybody has herpes in some form, whether it's on their mouth, presenting somewhere else on their body, like nose, and then people on their forehead, cheeks, or genitals.
Wow. There's so much information to learn, and I'm so happy that you're sharing this with everybody, because I know that I'm learning, so I'm sure you guys are too, and I appreciate that. Yeah, I think the more education we have around these topics, and like you said, destigmatizing, you know, the whole STI kind of community, you know, or like we're all going to be exposed to it at some point, just protecting yourself as best as possible and communicating with your partners is what I'm hearing is like number one.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so important. And I think just taking like the shame out of it, because most of us are going to contract an STI at some point or know somebody who has, there's no avoiding it really at this point in time. Like, sure, we could put methods in place, but we know that people, you know, don't like to use contraceptives of like barrier methods like condoms, dental dams. People, we've seen it again and again in our like surveys and things, that people just don't love them or they're not reaching for them. So at this point in time, it's safe to assume that either yourself or somebody you know is going to contract one, and that's just going to be a normal part of our lives. So I think it's, yeah, important that we talk about it and take that shame, because if, you know, most people are going to contract one, like it's people under 25, one in two people. So 50% of people under 25 are going to contract one. Like, we don't want that to be something that they're internalizing and feeling poorly about.
Yeah, because it's so easy to do, right? Because it is such a, I don't know, it's been not okay, or it's been considered ugly, or, oh, you're dirty, or whatever. Whatever the stories are behind it. No, people, just, it's life. If you're sexually active, it's very common to happen. So, yeah, communicate and protect yourself, because we don't want to have to where you, a very close call for you, right? It could have been an issue for fertility for you and some other issues.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is that correct?
Yeah, so like depending on the STI, you can have scarring and things that happen so that can affect your fertility, and then also pain. So for me, it was having pelvic pain. And even with other just STIs, something that can happen is if you have that, you contract the STI and then you start to associate your genitals as something bad, or that, you know, you're dirty or something wrong. And then sometimes we find that people will then start to experience pain during sex because they might not be able to subconsciously relax as much. So everything tightens up a bit, or you just have these, it's like this, just this almost like a disconnect, but also connect in a different way to your genitals. And then that can sometimes be, you know, one of the reasons why you will experience pain. And I feel like that was the case for me because I had surgery and there was no scarring. And then it was kind of like, once I knew that, the pain kind of went away. And it was like, I probably should have been referred on to a sex therapist or sexologist first to see if, you know, am I feeling negatively about this experience? Or is there ways that I can psychologically work with this pain first so that I could have avoided the surgery? I think it was just an assumption that because there was this biological thing wrong first, it's going to stay biological, which wasn't the case.
Yeah, I'm glad you make that distinction, because there are people out there who some of the pain is through experience and through mental, and our body remembers that, oh, I've got to, like, that's going to hurt, so I'm going to tense up, and sex shouldn't hurt. And I think that before you had mentioned something, just stop in that moment if it hurts.
Yeah, absolutely. So many people, just because, like, especially for vulva owners of women, we're told the first time's going to hurt. So expect pain. So then we're also anticipating pain the first time we have sex, which means we're going to be more tense and more likely to experience pain, and we're nervous and feeling all these things. And then if that keeps happening, you're like, oh, this is normal. I was told this would happen. Or I've heard so many stories where women will go to doctors and they just say, have a glass of wine, just relax, use some more lube. And it doesn't work like that. So I think we're already told to expect pain. So then if you are experiencing pain, please stop. Like, I remember I made a video on it. I was like, if you've got pain, stop. Where so many of us just push through, or we think, oh, maybe it will get better, or it's just easier for me to put up with this pain than to maybe have this awkward discussion of, like, you know, asking somebody to stop or ruining the mood. But, like, you don't want to make that association, because it's so easy to do. And once you start doing it, the more that you have sex that's painful, the more your brain's going to remember it, the more your brain's going to expect it. Even if you're feeling so horny and turned on and ready to go, your body can still then remember as soon as something goes to enter, like your vagina, for instance, oh, tense up. That's not going. We're not doing this. And then you can experience pain.
Yeah, that's a whole nother thing, right? That's when.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't like to have sex. I get turned on, but sex for me is not fun. So yes, thank you for sharing that, because yeah, that does happen with people that have experienced that before. Even like, I know this is like anal sex, right? If you've ever tried anal, and some people love it and some people are like, oh my God, no, because of the way that they experienced that the first time, right? So I'm grateful that you talk about ass play, or, you know, proper ways to enjoy or try.
Yeah, absolutely. And I find that with everyone, to be honest, especially like the first time they will engage in something like ass play, it burns, or it's painful, it hurts. And it's one of those areas that obviously we're so in our heads already, like, is it going to be dirty? Or like, oh, what happens if, you know, I get shit on something, or, you know, whatever.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It can already be you're in your head. You're in your head a lot. So I always, recommend that when you're trying something new, to try it yourself first if you can, because you'll probably notice a difference. Let's say if you're using a butt plug, you'll be able to get it in like 10 times faster by yourself than if you have your partner trying to put it in for you, because you can feel it, you can relax into it, you know exactly what's happening. Whereas when you have a partner, even if you have all the trust in the world and you've done this multiple times, they still might, you know, push it a certain way where maybe they go a little bit to the right, where you need it a bit to the left. And because obviously they're not in your body, they can't feel that. it just makes it that little bit harder, that little bit more tense, not being able to fully relax. And it's like obviously a protective mechanism from our bodies. But yeah, that's why I always recommend, you know, we said on the last podcast, try everything twice. We were talking, you know,
yes.
A lot of people say try everything once, but I was like, no, try everything twice, especially with sex, because sometimes it just doesn't, you can't relax, or you're in your head, or it doesn't feel that good, but didn't feel bad. And then the next time you try it, it feels so much better because you're more in it. You know what to expect. It's not just this new foreign experience. It's getting rid of, you know, some of those other factors, and you're able to enjoy it more.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, getting to know your own bodies, right? What's going to lead me into the next question about masturbation. I think it's so important for, well, even self-pleasure, just getting to know your own body is so important. Like you said, because even if you trust that person implicitly and you have the surroundings and everything's great, but maybe you're still learning things about yourself or you want to explore things, then isn't it better to try it yourself first and then guide a partner to being like, this is what I like. It's so much more enjoyable.
Yeah, it is. And you can just relax more. You know what to expect. You're able to do it in a safe environment first where you can, you know, set it up to exactly how you like, which you might be able to do with a partner anyway. But like, you know, you can put, you're in, like, let's say your own space. The lighting's how you like it. You're wearing something that's comfortable or nothing at all. You're able to turn yourself on the way you like first and then go into exploring it. And then it takes out that factor of having to, I guess, communicate of like, oh, like this way a bit more or this way, or, you know, stop. Like, you can just do that yourself. And then, you know, when you go into it, okay, before maybe you even start doing it with a partner, this is how I like it. These are my boundaries with it, you know, and then they've got some idea, because sometimes that's half the issue when people are having sex with somebody, even like for the first time, it's that like, how can I communicate this in a way that they feel like, is it going to ruin the mood, or they don't feel, because some people get, they want to go silent during sex. Like even like they don't want to dirty talk, which is one thing, but they don't even want to talk at all. So if you could have that conversation beforehand, can take some of that pressure off, because some people feel like if there's all this talking or directing, that it's gonna, you know, take away from that mood, because people think that sex should just be this natural, easy, like primal thing, that you should just want it and that it should just flow and happen a certain way or follow a certain sexual script. And it's so not the case. Sex is like so awkward.
It definitely is, especially that first time. I mean, yeah. You guys, you're so into each other and so turned on. It's just like there can be fumbling or hitting each other or doing this or doing this wrong or like totally messing the whole bar on that.
Yeah, it's so awkward. And it's just like, yeah, as you said, like fumbling around, even just the moving of like, oh, do this position, that. Who's going to be more dominant? Who's going to be more submissive? Who's calling the, like, you know, obviously it's a conversation between two, but who's calling like the shots of what's moving around? And it's just so many pressures, especially I feel like in heterosexual sex, where it's like penis and like vulva, a penis and vulva. I was like mixing the two
together.
That's
the way I know.
Like I find, especially so many penis owners, they're like, oh, like, am I going to be able to get an erection? Am I able to, you know, maintain the erection? When will I orgasm? Can I control this? And then that just adds to the awkwardness, because they're all up here, you're all in your head, or like it's the first time seeing each other naked. Mm-hmm. And it's one thing even to just take somebody in as they are naked, let alone being like, what do they think? What do, you know, how's my body look in this position or that position? Or like even certain things like doggy, oh my God, they can see my ass right now. Like there's just certain things that, you know, get people in their heads.
Oh my God. Yes. We need to try to shut it down, because I promise you, nobody's like in there thinking of all those things like with each other. And it's like, if you can just be present, like try to do some type of mindfulness. I mean, maybe if you're just like rushing into something and it's, you know, sexually crazed and you're just like excited, but there's some point in that, like, you know, connection that you can just take a minute and just kind of breathe and just be like, you know what, just let me be present. Let me enjoy the senses of pleasure and the things that don't feel good. I'm going to say something and know that that's your, in every right you have to say that and be okay with that.
Absolutely. And I think one tip I have with, like, I guess, some mindfulness, you don't even necessarily have to be someone who practices it from day to day. Definitely easier if you do. I always recommend like any tools you get given when it comes to sex, trying to practice them outside of the bedroom so it's easier during. Because like something like mindfulness, if you're only ever trying to do that in the bedroom but not out of the bedroom, you've never learned that skill, you got to be in your head trying to even just do the mindfulness in the bedroom. But one tip I have is to like almost like breathe in through your mouth or whatever, but then as you're breathing out, channel that breath almost to that area that's being pleasured. Mm-hmm. And often if you just keep coming back, like don't have orgasm to be the goal, or don't even set any goals. Just focus on that feeling of pleasure, and it will keep you so much more connected to your body, to like the sex that you're having, the partner or partners. Like I find that it's a great way to keep coming back out of your head, and you'll find you'll do that for 3 seconds and you'll go back to your head, but bringing it back just the same way. And that can just be an easy way, because then you're not necessarily even focusing on your breath. It's just trying to focus on that area that's being pleasured.
Yeah, I like that. Thank you. That's a great little nugget there, guys. Yes. Okay, so let me just go back to masturbation for a second. What are the benefits of masturbating? Or self-pleasure?
So many benefits. Yeah. So many benefits, from reducing stress, releasing, like, you know, the happy, feel-good chemicals like oxytocin, dopamine, serotonin. You can, you know, feel amazing. For some people, it can help you sleep. So some people like to masturbate before bed because I think it releases prolactin, which helps you sleep. Yeah. And then it can be nice. For other people, it recharges you, which is me. I do it. And then I'm like, yes, let's go. Let's go get the day or your little afternoon boost. And yeah, there's a lot of benefits. But then also, you know, you can learn about your body, understand your body more. I feel like they're probably like the main benefits that it has.
I know. I heard this one time that it's supposed to build your immune system every time you orgasm.
Honestly, probably. There's that many studies out there on like really niche topics. But then I've also heard that there's things like some people when they, not that it's masturbation itself, but ejaculate, like get sick, like get like the flu, like really random. It's like, don't know. There's not enough research out there. It's super, super rare. But like our body, these are just, they do so many things that like, you know, and each body's obviously different. So like it's hard for obviously research to cover all of that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. But, you know, have sex, self-pleasure, masturbate, anything that you want to try yourself first. Then you can guide a partner. Then you can kind of go in, not that you're not going to explore with that partner potentially and try new things, but have a baseline. I think that's so important. So that, it's almost like you have a little bit of sexual confidence going into that new relationship or new partnership.
Yeah. And you're always going to have yourself. You might not always have that partner. And let's say that they're the one that leads all the self, the exploration in the partnership. And sure, that might give you some skills or you learn new things and work out what you like. But if that's, I always just encourage that you do it yourself so that you take that throughout you through your whole life. And especially if you find yourself single for 5 years or something when you weren't expecting it, then you know how to explore yourself and keep it fun and keep it exciting and pleasure yourself. But then I think it's also important to touch on those who have like never masturbated and have shame about it, because obviously there's a lot of people out there that have never, typically women. And obviously society doesn't teach us how to do it or talks about it. And there's a lot of factors. So, it's people hold a lot of shame there. And one, I guess, of the reasons that have hypothesized myself when it comes to penis owners, vulva owners, why it's typically that we see people with penises, you know, masturbating at a younger age, being confident in it and talking about it, like jerking off or wanking, just seems like such a normal thing for guys to do. Like, I feel like if anything of a penis owner was like, oh, I don't masturbate, you'd be like, what? Why? Like, are you doing like No Nut November? Like, what's going on? But yeah, one of my reasons was that I feel like because penises are there, you can see when they get erect, but you can't miss them. Like, they look down, they see it. And obviously, if you've got this thing in front of you that all of a sudden becomes hard, you got to touch it. And then you're like, oh, that feels good. Let me touch it some more. Oh my God, I just had an orgasm. Let me do that again. Whereas for a vulva, it's, you know, it's tucked away. A lot of women have never even looked at their vulva before, and we don't know when we're getting aroused. We're not aware of the like signs to look out for across our whole body. So we're not necessarily, you know, looking to masturbate. Or if we do once or twice, like, oh, like, it was all right. But for some vulva owners, it can take like 20 minutes to become fully aroused, or 40 minutes even. Like, that's the higher end of it. So if it's, say, you're somebody who takes 20 minutes to become like fully, fully aroused, like vulva is swollen, able to experience maximum pleasure, a lot of women don't actually spend the time to sit with themselves for that long and explore. So, you know, if you do it for 5 minutes and just say, oh, I don't really feel anything, like, of course you're not going to really feel anything if you're somebody who's like that. And I think that's where education is super important, because a lot of people aren't even aware of that.
Yeah, I think that's really important. I think I've just learned this in the last, like, you know, 10 years or something, that, you know, most women, it's like 15 to 20 minutes for full arousal, or even, you know, orgasm, where, you know, can touch a penis, depending on the age, and that high sex drive can literally, you cannot even touch and ejaculate. So, you know, that's obviously an extreme. But yeah, it's really important to know that it's okay and that's normal. And men out there, I hope the people that are listening to the show at least know that by now. And if you don't, have patience. Like, I really say, like, love the vulva, love the clit. And a clit is so highly sensitive, and it could be too sensitive too. So be very careful with, like, you know, pressure and touch. And when you're getting to know somebody, I mean, I'm sure you speak about this. Everybody has different pressures that they like. They have different ways of, you know, oral sex that they like, and all of these things, whether they like a finger and all of these things. And just be aware that everybody is different, and getting to know that person can take time.
Yeah, absolutely. And just, yeah, having that patience, as you said, like, sometimes, like, the click can be super sensitive. Sometimes overstimulation happens where it then feels like it goes numb, like it was too much too soon. So building it up, but also just having that conversation with your partner or partners to make sure that you can pleasure them in the best way that you can, asking them, what do you like? Or at the end of a sexual experience, like, all right, what did you like this time? And because it's going to be different each time you have sex. Like, let's say you have sex in the morning, you might want different things, or, you know, feel more aroused or whatever in the morning compared to night. Like, you've come home from a stressful day at work and you're just feeling differently in your body. Like, it's two different experiences. Or I always recommend doing either 6 or 12 month check-ins with your partner, so that you are showing up and pleasuring each other in the way that they want to be pleasured. Because often you just get in the motions, you start to follow the same sexual script, do the same thing, you worked out, okay, this is how they like it, this is how I like it, let's just keep doing the same thing to get each other off. But that changes, and things happen, like kids, menopause, hormone changes, you might come off contraceptives, change contraceptives, you start a new job, you have just different lifestyle factors. Maybe you started going to the gym, or you stopped going to the gym. Like, so many things affect our sexuality. So I always recommend having these check-ins, just so you don't assume, like, so you're not just assuming all the time that this is how my partner, you know, wants to have sex. Because then if you know, some, I see this happens, it's like you keep doing it the same way, you start enjoying it less and less and less, but nobody's speaking up about it, no one's having these check-ins, and then all of a sudden you're at a crisis point and one partner doesn't want to have sex anymore, and then you feel like your relationship's at this crisis.
Yeah, and you should see somebody like Emily too, if you're having these discussions and you're feeling like you guys are butting heads, or you're feeling like you can't speak to them in a way that they're receiving, because I'm imagining that's something that you deal with, where maybe that 3 month check-in and he wants to be like, ah, you're just no fun anymore, you don't do this anymore. I mean, nobody's going to receive any information or energy that way, or like hear you. So just know that if you need someone to be that, you know, person to help you talk through those things, there's nothing wrong with that. That's actually the beautiful thing about your profession.
Yeah, absolutely. And I find that especially when it comes to certain sexual acts or kinks or things that people, one partner might not have a great understanding of, having somebody be able to explain that and work out too if that's something they even want to engage in. Or sometimes like a communication can just suck. So having somebody that's able to help facilitate that conversation and actually work out what's going on here. Like one partner might be like, oh, like, you know, not wanting to have sex as much, but there's actually something going on. Like I have clients that come to me that have been with their partners for years and they've never had an orgasm with them. And they've kind of tried here and there to point them on like what they like, but they just, you know, they're a bit of a people pleaser. They just go on the motions. It's easier to just, you know, do it. And then they get to this crisis point and it's like, well, if you had of, you know, come to somebody like a sexologist or sex therapist, whatever, at the start to help facilitate that conversation so that we can build the communication and be like, all right, well, how are you pleasuring each other? Is that even what you want? Like, what do you like? Do you even know what you like? Do you need to go do some solo play first to work that out? Or here's some tools to be able to find that together. Because often there's more going on than somebody just not wanting to have sex anymore. Even things with desire, like there's two different types of desire, responsive and spontaneous. Most people don't even know that. They just assume that everyone should just at the snap of their fingers be horny, or it be like hunger where you have this feeling and you need to satisfy it. But like We could go our whole lives without having sex and we would be fine. We might hate our lives, but we will be fine.
I like that you said that two forms of desire because, yeah, I think typically male men in general have that very instantaneously, you know, they can look at her or look at something or actually have an image that they have in their head, right, that they've fantasized about and they can get aroused. Where women, there's a different type of arousal. You know, we have to almost like take our time and, you know, marinate with like the sexual talk and the undressing and like, you know, there's a whole process and it can be really, really fun, but it's just not always instant and that's okay.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do think some of this does come down to like, you know, penises getting erect and they can see that and have that association. Because sometimes like a penis will be erect, but you're not actually horny, but then they're like, oh, I must be horny. Like there's just that assumption and they just go into the motions and just do it. But like they've done all these studies where they get men and women to look at like pictures that they're flicking through that are like sexual in some way. And they find the same, like a very similar response in the genitals of, and I think also in the brain of like being aroused to that image. But we're often not told how to like tap into ourselves and how to, you know, see that arousal build. Even a fact, I literally learned this at a sexology conference like last weekend. And I was like, oh my God, how did I not know this? But the clitoris, which a lot of people, if you haven't Googled the proper anatomy of a clitoris, please do so, because so many people think it's just this little button and it's not. But I found out on the weekend, which kind of felt like a no-brainer, but the clitoris and the penis are made up of the same tissue and they both can become erect. And like penises will have like 5 erections typically during the night. Clitorises do the same. We will have about 5 erections of our clitoris throughout the night and wake up with like an erect clitoris, which is like that morning wood for like penises. And I was like, oh my God, how has no one told me this? Like, I don't know why. Like, it makes sense. But I was just like, you know, it's just a fact that I was like, oh my gosh, like our bodies are very much the same parts, just organized in different ways, but we've been socialized differently. And obviously we have different hormones and things which like impacts it. But yeah, it's just funny. The more research, the more similarities there are across with our genitals.
Yeah. I have not heard that fact, but that's really interesting. But yeah, have you ever woken up in the middle of the night and you're just like for no reason, you're just like horny. You're like, what is going on? Was I having a wet dream? I mean, was like I having a dream? But you're like, I don't think so. Makes so much sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Or maybe your partner just starts spooning you in the middle of the night. Like, I feel like everyone's had that experience. So you start spooning in the middle of the night and then all of a sudden it just turns into sex.
That's a habit.
Yeah.
I really appreciate all that information because, yeah, I think just bottom line is the education in your sexual health, your sexual wellness, knowing that all of this is okay. And like you said, I think you just briefly touched about like kinks, but like having you to basically have those discussions, if you're not quite comfortable, but just this really quick, but do you recommend, is there any other like tool or activity that you could recommend to, if you do have a kink, talking to a new partner about it in a way that's not so, you know, blunt, if you will?
Yeah, absolutely. So I recommend, especially for people just to get a gauge, like if you've got a new person that you're dating and you don't know how kinky they are, or you don't necessarily feel comfortable starting a conversation yourself about what they're interested in, using something like a yes, no, maybe list, where I've got one on my website where you can like download it for free, go through, and it's like, yes, like absolutely, this is something I'm interested in, already do or want to do. Maybe like, oh, you know, if the context was right, or I'll, you know, I'll try it twice and see. And then our hard no is of absolutely not. And then I added another section, which I found other yes, no, maybe lists didn't have, which was giving or receiving, because there might be something you want to give, but you don't want to receive. And that's also just as important. So going through that with a partner, like have a date night or like sit down with a bottle of wine or something. Like, oh, I found this, you know, I was listening to this podcast, or I found this list or whatever. Let's go through it and talk about it. And you'll find you can either, you know, do it separately, come together and read the results, or go through together, because you'll probably find that it'll lead to conversations. Like there'll be one on there, let's say threesome. That's probably going to lead to a whole conversation about relationship structures and non-monogamy and getting a sense of where they sit with that. So as you go through, it's going to be, it'll probably take a while, take probably the whole date night, because there'll be a lot of conversations. Or getting like a deck of cards. There's so many different relationship decks, sex ones out there, like the one by Woosh I have. I can't remember what it's called, but by the vibrator brand Woosh, they have a deck of cards. And a lot of sex toy companies do now.
Oh, nice.
And that can be a way to, you know, spark conversation about what do you like? What do you not like? What do you want out of sex? How do you prioritize it? And then expanding that to the relationship, because I often include relationship questions as well, which can be a good way, especially early on, to set the parameters of what you want the relationship to look like. I feel like a lot of people sometimes miss that step or don't go into as much depth. They just kind of, ooh, I like you. I like how you're making me feel. And they are the same. Let's keep going. Okay, now we're dating. And other big conversations like monogamy, or just how you really want that relationship to look, or what I love you even means to me and to you, are missed. And then it's something that happens later on. And then you're like, oh my God, like you're a lot deeper, and there's a lot more emotions and feelings, and it can, yeah, just obviously make the conversations maybe a little bit more difficult in a way. It might make it easier, but yeah, it just depends.
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought that up. That's like so huge. And I don't know when anybody has told us really how to be in relationship other than like our parents, right? And most of our parents didn't have like the ideal, like perfect relationship. Some did, okay. But nobody says, oh, maybe you should have these conversations right away before you get into a relationship that deep of like, you know, these are my boundaries. This is what I expect. This is what I do. This is what I like. I'm open to this. You know, that's great. I mean, and you said it in a way that you can do it really playful and take a date and kind of like make it in a way that's not so like, I don't know, interviewing questions or anything like where it's just too awkward. So yeah, that's great.
Yeah. And it takes the pressure off one person feeling like they're the one that's, you know, having to ask all these questions. It's like, oh, here's just this deck of cards or whatever you're using. And it facilitates that conversation for you. So it kind of takes it off feeling like it is that interview, or that, you know, there's this one person who might be more curious or sexually experienced or whatever, because sometimes that dynamic can play out where it's like this one person who's a bit more reserved with sex or doesn't even think to have these conversations, and the other that feels like they're having to navigate this whole thing and it's all on them. Whereas if you put it on something else, it can, I guess, take away that dynamic.
Yeah, I love that. Well, I am so excited that you decided to jump on here and let everybody hear about all these amazing, you know, intricacies of sex and sexual health. I do have one last question, because I think I've taken so much of your time today. I appreciate it. What was one of your favorite dates and what was it?
Oh, one of my favorite dates. Let me think about this for a second. I'm trying to like flick through them all and work out like what was my My favorite date. Does it have to be first date or just like?
Oh, it can be any. It can be any partner, just something that resonated with you that you enjoyed. And basically, it's just to give a little bit of insight on you, but a little bit of people like to hear different things and how to date, whether it resonates with them or not. So I just kind of like that question.
Yeah. So one that comes to mind, which is probably fitting with our conversation today, was a couple weeks in. We're still like dating, going on dates, and we went on a little road trip, only like an hour down the road, but just like a little day trip to like this really nice coastal town. But on that road trip, when we were sitting in the car, because sometimes that can be like, oh, I want to talk about it, because awkward silence just feels so awkward when you start dating. You're not comfortable in silence. We did a yes, no, maybe list, but also we were like an online quiz. So we were just like going through, and it's literally for the hour drive there and then the hour drive back, filled in the whole car drive. And we learned so much about each other and what we wanted out of sex relationships. And then we also had this amazing date in the middle where we went and looked at waterfalls and went out for lunch and did all these other things. But yeah, that was probably the best one, because it was very much like I got to incorporate the best of both worlds, with my sexology and loving to talk about sex and then also enjoying the date.
I love that. I thank you for sharing. It sounds like a perfect date. I mean, like, yeah, it's the car rides, because sometimes, like you said, they can be awkward, but it can also be like the best place because you can't run away from conversation. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, all right, we're getting down to it.
Yeah, absolutely. And also when you're having discussions about something like sex, I find in a car, there's other things to look at. You don't have to look at each other. And sometimes that can be something that's really daunting for people when they're having these discussions, is sitting across from somebody having that. They need to fidget or be doing something. So I find a car, someone's driving, you don't have to look or make eye contact, and it can help you feel a bit more relaxed in it.
Yeah, that's great. Well, thank you for sharing that. So everybody listening here, if they want to discover more of Emily, where can they find you and learn more things about you and what you offer?
So at my website, www.emilyduncansexology.com. So you can find my podcast there, the Yes No Maybe list. I've even got like journaling prompts, things on there. You can also book sessions there. Anyone around the world can book them. And then you can also find my podcast, That's Orgasmic, on all streaming platforms. I have an Instagram page, That's Orgasmic, where I share the podcast, share a bit about my personal life as well, and share just information about sex, relationships, and sexual health.
I love it. Thank you so much. I really appreciate taking the time today for everybody here listening. So don't forget to go check out her information, everybody, and have a wonderful day. Thank you.
If you enjoyed today's episode and want to support podcasts like ours, then please hit that subscribe button, leave a 5-star rating, and or invite others to listen. Your support is what helps us grow and continue to bring you valuable content. Thanks for hanging out with us on today's episode. Let's stay connected. You can find me on Instagram at @CelesteMoreImage, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on today's discussion. For all the links, resources, and additional information mentioned in this episode, check out the show notes on my website, CelesteMoore.com. That's all for now, but stay tuned for our next episode where we'll dive into more exciting topics. Until then, see you next time, friends.